This is space. This is the final frontier. These are the cases before the court. Its mission: legislate strange new crimes, seek out new perpetrators and new defendants, to jurisprudently go where no law has gone before. This is The People versus Star Trek Voyager.
The People versus Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one.
For the defense,
Captain Matthias Zapp Spurlock, on leave from the USS Restorative Justice.
Prosecution,
John Q. Continuum Esquire.
Judge,
the Honorable Midnightian Leader.
May it please the court, case on the docket is Case 503, Extreme Risk. Stardate unknown. Original air date 10/28/98.
Order in the court. As is well known to all here, these proceedings are being broadcast to the fiery lakes of Asphodel, so I expect a civil tone and a consummate air of professionals. No rancor, no ribaldry, and not even a sniff of lemongrass. The question before the court is this: is Star Trek Voyager a misunderstood gem, or just plain, tawdry garbage? Now, your opening arguments, keep them brief.
Your Honor, I will indeed be brief. Extreme Risk is the name of this episode, and an extreme risk is what the Voyager writers' room took when writing this episode, when at best they should be aiming for a low to moderate risk, like a Jesse gets addicted to caffeine pills on Saved by the Bell sort of episode. That's more in their wheelhouse. Thank you.
Captain Spurlock.
Having gone almost one full week without putting one of its characters through intense emotional trauma, Voyager decides to tackle B'Elanna's grief over the loss of her Maquis comrades and the depression that follows. The resulting episode is surprisingly inoffensive, at least by the standards of 90s Star Trek. I need not remind the jury of the ill-advised episode of Deep Space Nine, in which Jake Sisko developed a wicked Hooperian beetle snuff addiction in response to being called a ding-dong by Kai Wen. Thank you.
Now, the evidence will be presented in the format agreed upon by the Fairfax Addendum to the Kittimer Accords. Audio recordings of three white guys interrupting each other. Play the holocron.
I don't want to.
Do it anyway.
I gotta find it. Hold on. 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 Oh, that shit. Yep, yep, yep.
Found it.
Extreme Risk.
Are you sure you want to take the extreme risk?
The super extreme risk?
You could thermalize at that altitude.
That's a fancy word for burn up.
You could boil alive or something, I don't know. Mare? You could...
We join B'Elanna Torres.
Yes.
As she's commanding some... rando, out of focus, ensign.
Yes.
To take the shuttle higher.
The ensign banana.
It's pronounced banana.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
The computer warns her that she could thermalize at this altitude. Or maybe it's the ensign. Whatever.
Yeah.
Ensign banana. Wait, but
banana.
Banana says also you could thermalize.
Also want to acknowledge that I really like B'Elanna's destiny armor.
Yeah,
she's like a hunter build, maybe.
Yeah. It's like a Mass Effect style helmet, too, kind of slightly oversized looking.
So she disengages the safety protocols.
Yes.
And the computer's like, this poses an extreme risk.
Titular line in the cold open.
Mm-hmm. And then I immediately, like, just from the look in her eyes and the way she's sort of like dead eyed and grimacing, I was like, oh, she just wants to feel alive. That's what this whole thing's going to be about.
You right? got it. You got it pretty
I got
quickly.
It right out of the gate.
I wonder why. Is there a reason that you were able to read that look so accurately and so quickly?
I try not to look in mirrors.
But when I do, that's what I see. I just want to feel
anything.
Every time you look in a mirror, do you like hold your hand up to the mirror and just look at it in a weird way?
I just want to be.
And then everything fades to black.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
I want to be on the cusp of thermalization.
Okay, and we should also, in the cold open, go ahead and get out of the way, because when she jumps out, we got some real shoddy CGI.
The effects look so...
And it's very clear that Voyager had a bigger CGI budget this season. They start to flex in this episode and the episode after it. Like, you see some... Mm-hmm. We got some CGI. It has not aged well at all.
Well, I like the... We're getting different angles of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's fine. That's good. But this was not good.
This, as cool as the costume looked, the jumping out of,
yeah, her
the,
falling is like, oh, it no.
looks terrible. Are we going to talk about how J.J. Abrams ripped this off for the 2009 Star Trek?
Voyager did it first.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, I understand they're all part of the same interconnected universe, but this is about the fifth time that we found something that Abrams lifted directly for like an Abrams-verse set piece.
Well,
giving them credit where they deserve it mediocre movies.
He rips everyone off, even himself, which is just weird.
She's falling.
Come up with some new ideas.
No, nah, he's good.
J.J. Abrams.
No, let's not talk about him.
J.J. Abrams.
So she's falling, and then it's like bridge to Torres, and she's like, I cannot believe it. I don't believe it. Like, report to engineering on the double. She has to end the program. And her pouty walk through the halls is chef kiss emoji.
This is the first time I remember seeing. I've always been curious about holodeck technology, mm-hmm, and how it's a room and all, yeah, the movement and stuff. And it shows her, you know, actually floating, and then she has to like lower to a standing. So like,
but again, how is it making her float?
Yeah, so force fields, I guess,
or like, it's all supposed to be force fields.
It's so materializing giant swamp fans underneath her that are blowing upwards. I mean,
I don't know. Yeah,
it's just the holodeck is one of those things, kind of like the universal translator. You just can't think.
You can't think too hard about it.
It's a convention of Star Trek. They need it to tell certain stories.
I will buy force fields, like, that's how they explain the Doctor being able to touch shit. So that's they've set it up. A little, at least. But yeah, I agree. You can't think about anything like that. Don't think about it too much.
So she's walking through the halls, pouting.
Yeah.
Seven rolls up and gives her some crack line about her protective attire, and that this must be a curious form of recreation if you need all this protective stuff. And then she actually asks if something's wrong, which is a repeated motif throughout the rest of this episode, of people asking B'Elanna, what's wrong? Is something wrong? Please tell me what's wrong. And she doesn't respond. She just cuts herself off. And pretty much this moment where she asks, like, hey, can you handle this launch without me? And Seven's like, of course I can, but why are you putting me in charge? Like, it's really unexpected because you hate me this week or last week. Who can keep track?
This is, yeah, every third week, B'Elanna hates Seven. And Seven has this marked on her calendar to know this is a hate week.
Right.
And she gives some like line about, I'm not feeling great. And she's like, oh, well, I'll inform the doctor you are ill. And she's like, nah. And then just wanders off.
Yeah.
And
so this is a something is bothering B'Elanna episode.
Yes. Very clear. Something's going on with B'Elanna.
A very special episode of Blossom.
Then we cut to on the bridge. They're trying to scoop up this probe. They're flexing their CGI budget. And they're like, oh, there's a Malon freighter. And I was like, who the fuck are the Malon? And like, it becomes clear later, they're the Captain Planet villains from the Abyss episode.
The ugly garbage people.
Ugly garbage people who dump garbage.
Right, right.
They really worked hard on this alien race and the nuance of their culture. They're just garbage men who are dicks.
Well, like, I like that Janeway at no point gives a shit about them.
No, she's done with that.
Or,
that's hilarious. Over it.
Or diplomacy or anything.
Well,
like, she care. Like,
I mean, you could argue that she does from the diplomacy standpoint. She's not like, lock phasers on fire. I mean, she does try to sort of talk it out and say, hey, leave our stuff alone and we'll go on our way.
Okay, she gives the bare minimum in the diplomacy department.
That's a subjective assessment on your part. Well, you don't know what Janeway, what her bare minimum looks like.
Her bare minimum might be like blinking twice before she kills you.
I think it's clear she's classified these guys as Skyrim bandits.
Yeah.
They're there to be slaughtered if she feels like it. Like that's the level of she feels about it. So they're trying to take the probe and they get the probe to emit a Polaron burst, which is all this is pretty cool. How them trying to like juke around the probe.
The probe looks cool too.
Yes.
It's an experimental probe or it has like an experimental shield design.
It has the technology that could potentially lead the garbage men back to that other space. It's like multi-spatial shielding.
Yeah.
Right.
They're finally using Borg tech.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which I thought was good.
And then she's like, steer the probe into the gas giant to get away from them. And like, well, won't the probe will be destroyed? Not if the Borg shielding does its job. And she's like hailing them, tell them like, don't follow, you morons. And then the freighter explodes.
Yep.
And she's like, shrug. I warned him.
Shrug emoji. Send that over all channels.
Okay, so then I think that's the end of the cold open, and then they come back. Brainwave's like, okay, look. So they're having the staff meeting, like, okay, the probe's stuck in a deep layer. It can't come back out. We got to get it out ourselves somehow. And B'Elanna wanders in, is like, hey, sorry I'm late, and just sits down. And they're like, so is there any, and Chakotay says, is there any possibility of us beaming out the probe? And she's like, no.
No. I wish she said, and, no.
And?
Yeah. He's like, I don't know if you remember, B'Elanna, this is Star Trek, where we have many ideas. She's like, no, it can't be done.
An engineer is supposed to say no, but I can try to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, she's like, no, we just can't get close enough. Please leave me alone. And so they say, look, the Malon freighter imploded, and then Paris steps to the fore. Says, we could go in with our new shuttlecraft. Everyone's like, this motherfucker.
Shut up about the shuttlecraft.
Yeah.
And then he just shits on the class 2 shuttles for a while.
Yes. Which,
deservedly so. Those are the Herbie shuttles.
And then they say, we don't have enough time to design and build one from scratch.
Right. And they're like, we all appreciate your enthusiasm. And then Kim's like, speak for yourself. Ooh, and I was like,
God, shut up, Harry.
Oh, man. Damn.
Just Sassy Harry Kim. Just landing a cheap shot in the ribs while everybody else is pounding on poor Paris for having an idea.
Yeah. And then he's like, what? I'll give you a head start.
Yeah, like I've given us a head start. I've already designed the fight.
Made a mock-up out of popsicle sticks.
I built this out of Lego.
And then Paris works the room well because mm-hmm. he's like, yeah. We can use Tuvok's brilliant design for
okay,
the
Okay, sharks, listen up.
Yeah, exactly. And even Tuvok is like, that design appears adequate. And he's like, oh, high praise. Big of you to admit it, Tuvok.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
And they're like, well, how will we know that the shield will protect? Like, hey, the probe made it. So that's our proof of concept. And then they're like, okay, how long is this going to take? And then they all kind of like the camera pans over to, as I refer to her as most of this episode, dead-eyed Torres. Sure. Just, there is no pinprick of soul light in her eyes.
Dead-ass.
And they're like, okay, I think we can get it done inside a week. And then everyone's all excited, like, well, as much overtime as it takes, we can all work together. And she's like, well, what about you, B'Elanna? And he's like, this is our dream come true. And she's like, uh-huh. Yeah, cool, whatever. Like,
sounds great.
Yeah, whatever. Sounds great. I'm there.
And then Janeway gives him the shove, like, well, what are you all standing around for? Get out of here, you scamps. Go build that ship.
Get to work, you sons of bitches.
And then we get a nice...
why would she call them that?
Why not? Why not?
She's not mad. She's happy.
She meant it in a loving way.
Oh, okay.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Is that not what she said?
And then they give us a nice last lingering shot of B'Elanna being totally dead inside.
Sad or
and I was
something.
Like, oh, yeah, I know. I know this feel. And so we go to the next scene where they're in the, I think they're in a holodeck or some like lab where they're playing around with the design.
They're modeling out what the final ship is going to look like.
Right. Paris and Tuvok are like, add tail fins, delete the tail fins. Like, we're not designing a hot rod, which is okay. He made that joke work.
He landed it the right way. It wasn't funny on the script, but Tim Russ's delivery made it pretty funny.
Yeah. And then the bit where Paris is like, no, we need to make it look tough. So when people see it, they're going to be like, oh, I'm not going to fuck with this ship. It's got tail fins.
Yeah, aesthetics matter.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
You want it to look mean. I get it.
I need a spoiler on this spoiler.
And then we have the moment where Seven's like, like the tetraburnium alloy or whatever. Torres's design is flawed, and everyone immediately swivels.
Oh, like, oh shit, here it comes.
Well, here it comes.
She's gonna punch her in the face.
First off, Torres's design called for a titanium alloy, and that's what was flawed.
Okay.
And then she suggests.
I cannot imagine that anybody gives a shit that we got our.
They want to fly into a thing. They want to fly into what? What is this, a nebula, probably?
It's a gas giant.
I know they care in the show.
They want to fly into a gas giant. A normal metal that we all already have isn't going to be enough.
Okay.
So, there.
Well,
what are you?
Duly noted.
Yes, sorry.
You win.
You are
consider yourself
chastened, Derek.
I feel terrible about this.
If you're going to recap,
perhaps
you
should sit in silence for the remainder of the episode.
I'm sorry.
Meditate on the difference between tetraburnium and titanium.
Fucking noob. What is this, episode one of season one?
Maybe it is.
We're
it?
Professional.
Where's Star Trek talker about caretaker?
Him? All right.
Where is he?
We can't do it. We're too far into season five now.
All right.
Season six, the conceit is it's a lost early version of this podcast.
Right.
Where we know nothing about Voyager, any of us.
Right.
And we're 10 years old.
Ooh.
Yeah. I like the ships.
I got to say, it wouldn't be that different, except our voices would be higher.
Yeah. We can do that in post.
That's fine.
I look forward to touching a boob. Okay. So her design is flawed. They expect Torres to like respond or give like a sassy comeback or fucking punch Seven in the face. But instead she's like, yeah, it's cool. Whatever. Do what you want. I gotta go. Bye.
I love how disappointed everybody is too when she doesn't fly off the handle. They're like, "Oh, that was gonna be today's entertainment."
Yeah.
Why is she taking this so well?
Right. Cut to,
and of course everyone's like, "Yeah, whatever. She's fine, I guess."
Yeah. Well, I have a big section about that. We'll talk about
all right.
Everyone missing the clear signs of what's going on.
Yeah.
For apparently weeks to months.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Cut to Paris in his quarters. I want to give a quick note that I do enjoy so far in season five. They're playing around a lot more with the uniform and the costuming. Like we're seeing people with the coat off and just the undershirt with the badge on. Or we're seeing people like just take that shit off and just be wearing their like underoos. Like I like that. Clearly, like we need to do more with the costuming.
Yeah.
They can't just be wearing the same shit all the time. Cool. Love it. Torres rolls in and he's like, "Hey, girl." And she's like, "Here's the thruster specs. Bye." And he's like, "Oh, but don't go. I mean, like, I can make dinner." And she's like, "No, I don't feel like it." And he's like, "Well," and then we get in, we start to get into Paris's terrible attempt to help her navigate whatever she's going through.
God love him. He does try.
He's trying.
His heart is in the right place.
But it comes across, which maybe this was intentional, it comes across as he's more focused on, "Why won't you tell me? Why are you doing this to me? Just tell me what's wrong so I can help you, you big dummy." So we haven't made out in weeks.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So here's how I read it. And maybe I read it this way because I have made this mistake in the past. I have been Paris in this situation where a significant other is clearly dealing with something, going through something. And I, not in an intentionally selfish way, but would immediately be like, "Oh, what have I done to make this worse for you? What can I do to make it better? How can I fix this?" Which is a very well-intentioned way to take somebody else's struggle and then make it about yourself.
Right.
You're not doing it in a self-centered way, but it's just a way of taking that and reflecting it back and making yourself a bigger part of it than you actually are, which is not helpful at all. And I think that's a fairly common mistake for people in couples to do that. So I'm giving the writers credit here that's what they're trying to depict.
No, like, I can buy that. Like, they've been very consistent, and we've talked about it before, that Torres and Paris are dating. They're just dating, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is a totally humdrum, normal relationship in that, like, they're probably not in it for the long term. They probably would never date except they're forced into proximity to each other.
And it's better than being lonely on the ship.
Right. But yeah, but all this stuff that he goes into, but like, she's like, he's like, what's going on? He's like, I don't want an apology. I want an explanation. I was like, "Urgh." And she's like, look, I'm tired. He's like, asleep is more like it. And he's and then he gets to the part where he's actually hurt. He's not communicating it well, but he's
right,
like,
right.
We've talked about this so much, about us working together, me as a pilot, you as an engineer, designing a new fucking spaceship. It's every engineer's dream, but you're acting like you don't care. And she's like, well, I guess I don't. Which is like, yeah. Dang.
Red flag.
Yeah, he's just being like, just be happier. Wouldn't it be easier if you just put on the happy switch and just decided to be happy?
I didn't take it quite that far.
I don't think he's doing it in a selfish way, but yeah. Sometimes when you're not depressed and somebody in your life is, yeah. There is part of you that's like, you hate watching them struggle.
Sure.
It's painful to watch them struggle. Yeah. You do worry that you could be to blame for some or all of it, you know? And so you're like, hey, have you tried just not being sad?
What if you just don't do that?
Yeah, it's well-intentioned, completely unhelpful, actually damaging more than just being unhelpful. So that's kind of how I read this scene with Tom. I don't think this is Tom being a bastard.
No.
I think this is Tom just not having the schooling to respond to this the right way.
Right, and this is where I heated up the old Voyager text thread. I was like, so no one has heard of depression in the 24th century. What, like, has depression been so removed from the normal experience of humans that no one has caught any of these signs? And I think it was you, Josh, who was like, pretty much no.
Yeah. So my understanding, and I'll tell you how I'm extrapolating that, because there's so many times definitely in the first two, the Roddenberry seasons of TNG and intermittently throughout other series, where they hammer the fact that, oh, well, most common ailments and disorders and things like that on Earth have been completely cured because we have our little medical sonic screwdriver thing. We can just zap at your head and that balances everything out. So I think some of the common forms of depression, anxiety, things that are really caused by a chemical imbalance that are mm-hmm. precipitated by that, they have just sort of tweaked away. And so maybe the less common forms that are driven, you know, purely by emotional distress or maybe it's plausible that they wouldn't have as much experience with dealing with that. I don't know. It's an interesting question. What is the state of mental health in the 24th century?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, they had the counselor on TNG.
So people definitely realize you have to deal with your feelings.
Yeah.
But look how often people still push back against Troy, too, when Troy tries to help them.
True.
I've been rewatching TNG. So this is all fresh in my mind.
I mean, there's got to be. It's still got to be a thing. I mean, I don't know.
Well, this kind of reminded me of all these debates we've had about the holodeck.
Where
because they never explicitly say that it's a tool for it's pornographic. That's what it's for.
Right.
It's there to fill a need, but because they don't, it's about what they don't say. We're kind of filling in the gaps of what they don't say, and just by this whole episode, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to.
They do kind of imply that. A little bit towards the end of this episode, they're like, I don't want to have to go, or maybe it's kind of in the middle end, where Chakotay, Paris, and Janeway are talking, and he's like, and Chakotay's like, well, I don't want to have to dig through someone's personal holodeck log.
That is almost verboten. What you do in the holodeck is your business, and no one's going to look at you.
I wonder if maybe attitudes about mental health have actually taken a step back in the 24th century because so many ailments have been remedied and poverty has been done away with. People are free to completely self-actualize is the idea. You mm-hmm. can carry, like you yeah. can go, you can truly now for the first time go as far as your intelligence and your will and your own two feet will take you. And so people have actually started talking about that stuff less. Because if you think about mm-hmm. some of the episodes during the Dominion War in Deep Space Nine that have to do with PTSD, mm-hmm. it's the same kind of response. Yeah. People are like, why is that guy being such a dick? Well, I don't know. Maybe because he's been on and off combat patrols for the past 3 months and he's seen hundreds of people die mm-hmm. during that span. And it takes him 3/4 of an episode to come around to that realization.
Yeah, I mean, they've done plenty of episodes just across all Star Trek, not plenty, but a handful of, you know, trauma related, you know, depression and, you know, that sort mm-hmm, of stuff. Yeah. I'm trying to think, there's never been an episode where someone is just depressed because of having to
being alive.
It's just a paper moon.
Yeah.
Where Nog loses his leg in Deep Space Nine. That the whole episode is just about him being this kind of despondent, depressed.
But that's because of a thing.
But this is because of a thing.
I'm just saying I would have preferred it not being about a thing.
Personally. Oh, sure.
You're saying depression. That somebody just literally. Well, that's what that again. But that goes back to my art. That the kind of.
But like.
The kind of depression people deal with that's not provoked by
trauma.
Events in their life, by yeah. trauma, maybe has been, in this fictional universe, has been remedied by technology.
I don't know, like, I think of like Barkley, and he's not necessarily depressed, but he's like super anxiety.
He's stricken. Very introverted.
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem to mainly handle it through talk therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's gotta still exist.
Okay, well, so maybe the better question here is, what is the state... Since you brought up Barkley, what is the state of talking about mental health in television in the real world
yeah.
in the 90s? Because one of the reasons I don't like that Barkley episode, I know, is that they play it for yucks. The one you're talking about where he's hiding out in the holodeck mm-hmm. and he's got the Three Musketeers program.
Well, not even just that episode, but he's scared of using the transporter.
And it's always played for laughs.
He is always played for laughs.
Yeah, because what Barkley has is a crippling anxiety disorder that keeps him from reaching his considerable potential as a human being.
Yeah.
Which is not funny.
No, it's
but
not.
But those episodes have not aged well at all because when they were made in 1995, 6, whenever that was, they were like, let's clown on this guy who can't get his shit together.
Well, yeah, at that time,
this is better than that. So this is a step up.
I agree.
It is. Agree. But at the time, psychiatrists, they're shrinks. They're quacks.
Yeah.
That's sort of true.
The writers wouldn't necessarily have had that, this is a crucial part of health, not even mental health, like the whole human, the whole body, all that stuff. But yeah, I was kind of saying before, like, because they don't get into it, we kind of have to like guess and assume certain things. Like either, like you're kind of saying, like depression just from a chemical imbalance in your brain has been snap your fingers, it's gone, doesn't happen anymore.
Just how they can knit, people don't have broken arms because they can knit your bones back together in 5 minutes.
So perhaps that has given especially in Starfleet, like a huge blind spot to this sort of depression, that the clinical depression that Torres has fallen into. Or this could be specific to Voyager, obviously everyone is dealing with depression all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone's sort of trained themselves to not see it in their, it's like, I'm just going to let you deal with your thing, 'cause I've got my own thing to deal with. As long as you're at work on time, we're not going to jump in your brain until we absolutely have to.
And they don't have a ship's counselor, because only ships that are designed for long deep space missions have a counselor.
One, yeah. Right.
And they were never intended to function this way.
Yeah. I think this is the one time where I wish they didn't connect it to a past episode, to a past event of all the Maquis getting killed or whatever. And I wish it was just about, we're in the middle of nowhere, we have no support, I miss my home, I miss my family, and all, I wish it was just
Which
about.
Is kind of what the Abyss episode was about.
Night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just the cumulative wear and tear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I want to applaud them for like actually having these concepts and these problems emerge, but I'm still just like,
we would certainly expect any show made in the last 10 years or so to have a much more nuanced and mature handling of this issue.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were actually a little bit ahead of the curve in at least the way they attempted to deal with this in 1998. Mm-hmm. I probably could have prepared some specific reference points before the episode.
I think the lead up is pretty accurate. I don't have a problem with how it sort of progresses.
Yeah.
I think the dismount is bad.
I think this is one of those episodes where we all acknowledge it has not aged especially well.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to make a decision as to how badly has it aged relative to what they were attempting to do in the context of the time.
Sure.
Right.
Sometimes something has aged so badly, you just have to say, well, it's trash now.
Throw it in the bin.
Yeah. Sometimes if you can see what they were attempting to do and
kind
of backdate it, I don't know. We'll decide.
Okay. So Torres walks down the hall, and then she does like a weird turn. And then she's like, turn on the holodeck. disengage the safety protocols, override, and she runs in and she takes off her fucking coat and just showing the Roxanne Dawson guns that she's built up.
Outstanding deltoid development on Roxanne Dawson.
And then a Cardassian comes and they get in a vicious fucking fight and then they go to commercial.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back on the bridge.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, we got the probe, Janeway says. The Malon freighter's on the way. And that's when I finally put two and two together of who these guys were. I'm like, okay. So they start arguing back and forth, like, you were trying to steal our probe. You need to compensate us for our losses. Well, we're experts at salvage operations. I'm controller Vrelk.
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 Yeah. That doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, writers.
I do love this moment with Janeway, which, like, my suggestion is that
even the writers don't care about the Malon. They're like, what's his name? I don't know.
Blurding.
Blurvins. Blurvins.
The actors who have to actually say it in front of a camera are like, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks so much. I do love Janeway's bit here, which is like, my suggestion is that you leave orbit, and if you see anything else that says Voyager on it, you might want to leave it alone. I was like, damn, girl.
I just love the attitude.
And then he's like, blah, 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 and she's like, end transmission. End transmission.
I just love the attitude. He's like, these fucking losers.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay, now we go back to Sweaty Torres stumbling back to her quarters. She's like poking her wound so she can feel something. She has a dermal regenerator hidden in the bathroom. So she starts fixing the wounds on her arms and stuff. And then this is the moment we talked a little bit before about. She looks in the mirror. It's just a weird look. And then she reaches out to touch the mirror. And I'm literally like, what are we supposed to get from this? Obviously, she's very upset. I get that. But
and then she goes through the mirror.
Well, it's like you know, because maybe it's because the expectation of me or the audience or whatever, like when a character in Star Trek looks at themselves in the mirror and starts freaking out, I'm like, oh, are they about to is their face about to change? Are they about to run their hand through their hair and all of it's going to fall off? Like, it wasn't clear what I was supposed to get other than her freaking out a little bit.
It feels like a sci-fi prompt is coming and there isn't one.
No, there is not.
I took it as she's sort of, I mean, she's obviously sort of disassociating from the world around her.
Yeah.
But even her own reflection being part of that world that she's sort of disconnecting from.
Right.
You know, the sense of, I see this reflection.
It's a scene about disassociation.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's me. It feels like it's another person that I don't know on the other side of the glass.
I mean, and I understand that she's alone and it wouldn't make sense for her to start talking to herself. But I don't know. I feel like we needed
a little something.
Something to really hone that in.
That's fair.
It was very subtle.
Maybe too subtle.
It was really too subtle for this, for what they've presented so far. It was a little too subtle, I think.
And then the next scene where Torres goes to the mess hall to visit Neelix. I kind of love this scene and this use of Neelix, like the concept that Torres, like you seek out what you need. And in this moment, she's like, I want to go talk to Neelix, you know, like, cause you can't really let herself understand what's happening. She's like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. I can handle everything. But then she comes to Neelix, the person with the most emotional intelligence on the game, on the ship. I was a little disappointed that Neelix wasn't the person to figure this out. To be like, okay, something's very wrong. We need to I need to talk to the cat. Like something to use him a little better. Cause he's kind of slowly morphed into that counselor role.
Yeah.
Being the morale officer or what have you. But still, I think it's a really lovely scene where she comes in and Neelix is happy to see her. And she's like, hey, I came. We should catch up. Like, this is like, she just literally just walked in the room.
It's sad how happy he is for someone to just even be pretending to take an interest in him.
Right.
You feel like very few people ever bother to ask Neelix, how you doing? What's been going on? What you been up to lately?
They just grouse about the food. And the bit where he's like, name your poison. And she's like, what? He's like, I was expecting a scathing but affectionate insult about my cooking. And she's like, oh, sorry. I have disassociated very hard today.
Yeah.
I'm barely here. He's like, oh, well, you'll feel wittier on a full stomach. What would you like? And she's like, banana pancakes.
Banana pancakes.
Banana pancakes.
Instant banana, special recipe for pancakes.
That's right.
And then she tells about my grandmother used to make them for me. And every time I had them, they make me smile. And he's like, one smile coming right up. Nice line for Neelix.
I mean,
and then she's like,
can't she replicate her own pancakes?
It's about the service.
Service with
the smile. So she's like, so how have you been? And he starts talking about his security training, which I like. They're still following that thread of Neelix learning other duties on the ship. He's not completely inept, per Tuvok. And then she's like, and he's like, hey, aren't you going to try the pancake? She's like, oh, sure. And she like cuts a bite, eats it mechanically. And she's like, delicious. And then she's like, I have to get back to work. And this is when I was like, please, someone on this ship figure this out.
Yeah.
Like this person is in so much pain.
Yeah.
And no one's connecting the dots.
And it's really obvious.
Oh, yes. Like everything about her, like her attitude has changed. The way she communicates with people has changed.
She's a different fucking person.
Yeah.
Do you think the fact that that character is prone to moodiness is giving them sometimes you see things in people and you look for a way to write it off because it's uncomfortable to address it or uncomfortable to deal with it. And she's prone because she's half Klingon and they celebrate their emotions, right? Which is great. Mm-hmm. But like maybe the fact that she's prone to sort of being in dark moods for a day or two at a time gives them an outlet to say, you know what? I'm sure she's fine. I'm going to go back and focus on my job.
I mean, I kind of see that, but at the same time, when she was moody, there were, you know, high peaks, low peaks. And when she was in a bad mood, she was pissed, you know. And, like, now she's just in this sort of dull middle nothing, sort of not reacting to anything. I feel like that's super obvious. Like,
yeah.
And this was the point where I got a little worried that there was going to turn out to be some dumb space alien virus thing that was making her feel this way. I do like that it's just clinical depression. We're dealing with clinical depression.
Sure.
Okay, so real quick, we go back to the bridge where Janeway's like, what are these goddamn Malons still doing here? And she's like, well, they're waiting for us to retrieve, and then they'll try to steal it from us. And like, they think they can outgun us? No, but anyway. And then Seven's like, come down to Astrometric's lab. I want to show you something. She goes down there, and Seven's been spying on the Malon. Cool.
I love that.
And they figure out that they're making a spacecraft, too. And then currently on schedule, they'll finish about 36 hours before we finish ours. And Janeway says, well, we've got ourselves an old-fashioned space race on our hands.
She has some good lines.
She has some really good lines.
I like that one.
Captain's log. I've stepped up the pace to finish first, and we've closed some ground. But so far, it's a dead heat. And then we get to they're working on the shuttle, and Paris and Tuvok are arguing about keep proposing the same flawed strategy again and again. It won't work. And then here's the interesting thing. Torres yells at Bork to like, turn that damn thing off. Can't hear myself think. But I noticed throughout the whole episode, he's always out of focus, or you only see the back of his head. So I'm like, oh, I guess they didn't have that actor around, so they just threw some tall guy.
It's a Bork imposter. Well, being Bork really launched his star, so to speak. And so he was probably on to bigger gigs at this point.
No, he was. That was him.
Oh, weird.
That's him.
That
was a director choice. They show him more clearly in the shuttle later, right before they leave.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he's just like in the background, super in the background. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So Paris is like, we should launch now and hope for the best. That is the most illogical statement you've ever made. Then they start talking about the micro fractures. And I don't know how I feel about the Captain Proton panel he built where he wanted to feel the engines.
I want to feel the toggles.
I don't want to touch these panels anymore. And I'm like, okay.
This is Tom's toy that he has finally found a real life justification to create.
Yes. Yes.
A reason to commit the resources.
He wants knobs that aren't labeled.
I guess I could see as a pilot, you want to be able to feel the controls.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a pilot. But
it did bug me later when they actually take the shuttle out. He never touches the panel. He doesn't move.
That's the main thing. Yeah.
They should have followed up with that and had it be a very sort of tactile process.
Yeah. Like a manual stick, like when they put the Enterprise on manual.
Yes. So then they're talking about the microfactors. How are we going to solve this problem? And then Torres like gets an idea, and like everyone's like, "Hey, where are you going? To the holodeck? Why? To die?"
She doesn't really get an idea. She just wants to leave.
Yeah, she wants to go to the holodeck. The holodeck is her drug in this episode.
Yeah,
it's pretty consistently portrayed that way. It's like, you know, but she makes up like, oh, "I'm going to check out the microfracture problem." And she goes, she like starts the simulation, And like she like turns off the safety protocol, so it's an extreme risk. And then the microfractures start to happen, and then she slams her head into the side of the console and passes out. Then we go back to the bridge real quick, where the Melons start venting their theta radiation to just like cause problems for Voyager. Like, oh, I'm so sorry, that was rude, wasn't it? And but basically just the Melon and Janeway talking shit to each other. And then she's like, look, we gotta finish the shuttle faster. I'm tired of these sons of bitches. And then Janeway to Torres, she doesn't answer. She's like, where is she? She's on holodeck one. And she's like, oh, get down there and get her out of there so we can get back to work. Chakotay comes in and then the shuttle is crashing on the holodeck. So we're left with the understanding that the safety protocols are off.
Mm-hmm.
If it crashed during the simulation, it would just kill her.
Yeah.
Right. Chakotay arrives in the nick of time, freezes the program, grabs her up and takes her to sickbay for a medical emergency. And then we jump ahead in time where Torres is waking up in sickbay and she's like, what am I doing here? And he's like, well, you had an accident on the holodeck. You've been out for almost 12 hours. And she's like, oh, I got to get back to work. And the doctor says, Captain has asked me to keep you here. I find it interesting how minimized the doctor's role is in this episode.
I thought that was interesting too. Because since he is sort of a like living psychological diagnostics manual,
mm-hmm.
For whatever shortcomings he may have in his bedside manner,
right.
You know, and his sensitivity to these issues, he's the closest thing to a ship's counselor that they have. Sort of a combination of him and Neelix, I guess. The mm-hmm. two of them together would be sort of, you know, Voltron into Voyager's ship's counselor.
Yeah.
So it is strange, especially since they've been using him a lot lately.
Yeah.
It's strange to have him kind of sidelined in this one.
Well, I think it's tough because, you know, like Chakotay and Torres have a past. She's dating Tom. You know, she has whatever her and Neelix have. You know, it's like, I think the balance, and her and the doctor, obviously, but I feel like the balance is off a little bit as far as the time that they spend with each of them.
Yeah, it seems like maybe early in the versions of the script, like, because ultimately it's her relationship with Chakotay that allows her to climb out of this. And I feel like by Chakotay not being as involved in the first half of the episode, it's weird that he's like hyper crucial to the resolution of the episode. But
he's not even the one noticing really that she's having a problem.
No.
Until he just shows up and sorts it all out.
I feel like in that staff meeting scene, they all had kind of like, oh, she's being like this again, sort of looks. And I'm like, so y'all, it feels like they were aware, just not like doing anything about it.
Right.
Okay. So the captain comes in and she's like, doctor, excuse us. And then she's like, look, what's going on? And this is when we find out as the audience that B'Elanna has been doing this for months.
Yeah.
She has internal bleeding, contusions, all sorts of untreated stuff. She's basically been going and just sort of patching herself up. But semi-constantly over the past few weeks, it's self-harm. Like, it's basically like she's cutting herself. And Janeway's like, you didn't seek treatment. These could be life-threatening. She's like, does it look like I'm dying? And I could see how this episode could be triggering for people who have dealt with members of their family who have self-harmed or they've self-harmed.
Yeah.
Like, her being like, everything's fine, nothing's wrong.
She does the tough guy thing when people are confronted with stuff like this, where she says, I'm not going to run to the holodeck every time I stub my toe. Come on. Which then, when pressed on that, turns into sort of anger and defensiveness about it. And
it's really well. Roxanne Dawson is great in this episode.
She's great.
I don't think we've said it, but like she's very good in this episode.
And some of these interactions are well written. Even if we don't love the way it all connects throughout the course of the episode, there are moments within these scenes that are written in a very authentic way.
I love this interaction with her and Janeway. But like I said, I think it's part of the problem of this was written in 98.
Yeah.
We're in 2020. And like it's like they didn't know how to give Janeway the right word to say. Like, cause she seems like she's aware there's a huge problem, but she doesn't know what to call it. Even though they use the term clinical depression later in the episode, it seems like this is something they have no tools to deal with in the normal Starfleet regulations or sickbay. Cause it comes down to Chakotay just basically just sort of manhandles her. through.
But clearly,
which is how you're supposed to deal with it, I think. Yeah,
but, clearly, that's not a thing. I mean, maybe. Of course, they don't have counselors on smaller ships. I'll give you that. That makes sense. But clearly, like, that sort of mental health stuff exists now and is okay. Because, you know, most people went to see Counselor Troy. You know, that was a, it wasn't like, oh, you're going to see Counselor Troy. Oh, yeah. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's odd.
It's odd, especially considering that we just had an episode with Janeway locked in her room for 3 months.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that.
Come on.
Can you think of any Star Trek episode across the brands where they ever say this person is dealing with depression or this person is dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, that they ever put a clinical name to the things that people are dealing with when they're talking about mental health? Obviously, for physical things, they do that.
Well, they say clinical depression in this episode.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. So other than the actual episode it's later, that we're talking about right
now. The
doctor
shows up clinically depressed.
I didn't catch that. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, like I said, it's one of those things where it's a product of the time it was written. Just they didn't have the language to grapple with this as we would expect now.
Right.
But it's confusing because it's supposed to be the 24th century. So you're assuming I don't know. Like it's a weird blind spot.
We assume that attitudes continue to evolve, which is why we were trying earlier to come up with a reason or a justification as to why they might have taken a step back or manifested sort of a blind spot, like you said.
Okay. So she takes Torres off the shuttle project. You got to remain under the doctor's supervision.
Right.
And she's like, look, you know, I'm taking you off the shuttle project. I'm sorry. And Torres basically, I'm not. I don't give a shit. And then she's like, now I know there's something wrong. Now you know.
Yeah.
No one has heard of depression in the 24th century. So, okay. So they're back working. When it's back in Janeway's ready room, it's her, Chakotay, and Paris. They're like, hey, is the shuttle ready? The engine's at 90%. We still have the microfracture problem, but we can probably I'll just spread some butter on the hull. It'll be fine. Don't worry.
Yep.
And then she's like, okay, let's talk about B'Elanna, which I understand they're talking about her as a crew member. Like, as this crew member has a problem, how do we deal with it? I don't know. It felt vaguely invasive of her privacy to be like, I'm going to talk to your boss and your boyfriend about you and how we're going to handle
the boyfriend is the weird part. Yeah. Well, I mean, people in her chain of command talking about somebody having obviously who is in a state of turmoil is something that absolutely would happen in a sort of quasi-military environment, like the one that they live in.
Yeah.
Having Tom there probably was unnecessary.
I mean, I know they wanted him there because they wanted to be like, Tom, you had no idea this was going on. He's like, well, I didn't know she was intentionally trying to hurt herself. Just that she was just distant.
He does say, you know, we haven't really talked much lately.
Our relationship is terrible.
Or spent much time together lately. It is weird. And I feel like they could have thrown in a line and be like, obviously this is weird because, you know, we're actually friends with her as well. You know,
yeah. I mean, lines get blurred on Voyager. That's something they've kind of explored before.
Yeah.
But then
it is real weird. I too took it as sort of an invasion of privacy and like just it was weird. And then they went and invaded her privacy as far as her holodeck records and all that goes.
Which obviously in this situation that was the right call because she's harming herself.
Yeah, absolutely.
With them. But this is where we kind of talked about before. Like they're clearly crossing some taboo. Like, you do not look at other people's holodeck programs unless they invite you.
Yeah.
Because they're personal and private, and you're probably fucking people.
It's like checking their web
history. Don't look at my internet history.
Yeah.
I'm looking right now. So she says, okay, start.
I have a message. Like, when I die, it will go out to Derek. Be like, Derek, delete my internet history.
I got you covered.
And he'll tweet it out line by line.
Don't let my mom see it. You can tweet it out. That's fine. But don't let my mom see it.
Cut to Torres in her quarters, staring into nothing. And then she's laying there, and then someone like knocks on the door or whatever. And she's like, they knock again, and she's like, no. She's like, I'm sleeping. And then Chakotay just walks his ass in. He's like, hi. And she's like, hi. And then he's playing the I'm your buddy card. I'm like, oh, so the doctor let you out of the cell block, huh? And then she's like, yeah, I mean, this is all ridiculous that I'm having to do all this. And he said, I have clinical depression, which reminds
whatever
me
of that is.
Yeah. Have you guys seen that, the comic of the wolf who has clinical depression?
Mm-mm.
I'll send it to you later.
Okay.
It's delightful. And then she's like, Chakotay's like, well, you know, we probably should talk about what's going on. He's like, what, are you the new ship's counselor? He's like, I'm just a friend. And then they bond over, like, this is typical Starfleet. They're getting their panties in a wad because we're not doing what they think. And then he's like, well, look, you know, like all these programs, there's nothing I can't handle. He's like, oh, great. Well, show them to me. Let's go right now. He's like, oh, well, we can't because the captain took away my holodeck privileges.
Consider them reinstated.
Consider them restored.
I like that.
And then he basically walks her down. And then as soon as he gets in there, he's physical with her. He grabs her. Like, Torres programs Zeta 1. She's like, oh, no, not that one. And then he drags her in.
Yeah.
And then he makes this pretty much she has. This is, seems to be part of the trigger for all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Is like a couple days after she got the news about all of her Maquis comrades being slaughtered, she made a holodeck program.
Of that
moment so she could witness it.
Yeah.
Which is already bad. Which obviously I think just being on Voyager in this situation is going to put you in a bad headspace for a lot of things. But she talks about how she walked in. She could only stand there. She was there for like less than a minute, like 47 seconds, I think she says. Like, and Chakotay is rightfully kind of pissed about this. Like, why did you make a video, like a video game of our friends being dead for you to like ogle at?
Because on the surface, it looks bad.
And he's basically arguing with her, like, why did you do this? You can't leave. Why are you trying to hurt yourself? Are you trying to kill yourself? Is this suicide? She's like, no. And then she finally admits, like, if I sprain my ankle, at least I feel something. Because basically, and this is actually handled pretty nuanced and well. This is a good scene.
Yeah,
it is. Even though, like, probably not a recommended method of helping people through their clinical depression.
I was going to say, if it wasn't for COVID, if it was easier to have guests in the studio, and also if we ever planned anything more than a couple of days in advance,
right,
this would have been a good episode for us to reach out to UGA, find the one Star Trek fan that's in like the clinical psychology department, and talk about if there really ever is a place for a tough love approach in precipitating someone's road to recovery. Because I have no expertise in the area, and I don't want to. Normally, I'll bullshit about anything,
right,
but this is too sensitive of a thing for me to try to bullshit
seems
about.
Seems like a bad idea.
It seems like a bad idea, but it's the kind of thing that seems like a bad idea, and then someone who knows what they're talking about could say, "Well, sometimes you do need to shock somebody a little bit to let them realize that they have kind of fallen off the rails. Then you can go through, you know, begin an actual therapeutic process." But I don't know.
And in the context of Voyager, like, this is all about her grief, like where she's had all these repeated experiences in her life where she loves something and then it goes away.
Right.
She loves something and it goes away. And this just broke her.
Yeah.
And but him being able to share, like, this is a shared trauma. We both feel this same grief.
Yeah.
Him being the one to like Sherpa her through it, or basically let her bootstrap her way out of it, makes sense. Like obviously they don't, like, they don't have a counselor. It's got to be somebody.
Right. Yeah, but it's like a switch almost.
It is a little quick.
It's a little quick.
It's a little quick, which I understand. It's 45 minutes.
Get that, but like, I don't know. I mean, it is the problem with the 45-minute episode and the fact that for the most part, we don't do multiple episodes sort of long arcs on this show at all.
They'll do multiple, like, plot things will persist.
But not characters.
But not character arcs. Maybe very, very stretched out. And we kind of have to, like,
I think
one time they did that with Tom, where it seemed like Tom was sort of having, like, a 5-episode nervous breakdown. It turned out he was faking it.
Yeah.
It was all part of a scam.
Yeah. No, that's true. I don't know. I still think I wish it had just been, you know, that it hadn't been triggered by this.
Right.
You know? And maybe I wouldn't have a problem with it being triggered by this had they dealt with Janeway's depression.
That's true.
Better.
It's the first three episodes of the season, and we've had two major characters clearly have major depressive episodes.
Yeah. I wish, had they
it's
not...
It's clearly something they want to talk about. Like, yeah.
Like, I feel like had they... And that was my main gripe about the Janeway episode, was that...
Oh, it's time to get better.
Through plot and through necessity, we're being attacked. I guess I'll leave my room now. That's how she dealt with it and got through it. Or that was the catalyst for sending her.
Yeah, I'm trying to set my brain back to 1998, and all I'm getting is old episodes of Renegade with Lorenzo Lamas.
And
how did they handle depression in
Billy
Renegade?
Billy Six Killer?
We called him Billy Six Fishes.
Six Fishers.
Yeah. Billy Six Fishes.
So yes. I'm okay with that. I'm more okay with that with Janeway in Night, because Janeway's funk was...
Janeway's a racehorse.
Yes. It was precipitated by the fact that they had nothing to do. There were no worlds left to conquer there in the big black vastness of space that they were sort of... I could see her being broken out of that funk by a stark reminder that, oh, you got a ship to command and protect and you have things to do. It removed the thing that was causing her funk that she was in. In this case, it's still the thing that was causing her feelings of depression still very much exists.
Sure.
That being the violent death and absence of her comrades and her guilt about that. Now, she does get some reminders here at the end that, hey, you still have a job to do. You do still have a family. You have people that value you and need you. And that sort of pushes her back in the right direction.
Yeah.
But that it's less credible. Her sort of instant recovery in this is less credible than I think Janeway's instant recovery in Night.
I agree. I'll give you that. Yeah. Like in Night, she had to recover because they're under attack.
Yeah, and once the attack happened and they made it out of the whatever the void that they were flying to, the thing that was causing her to feel that way was removed.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just feel like if we want to talk about depression, you know, if that's what they want to talk about, like I would be okay with this episode as is, for the most part, other than the quick recovery, had Janeway not, you know, had they not used plot to help Janeway, to force Janeway to recover.
Right.
You know?
Well, like I said, I don't think it came from a place of they knew the correct way to handle depression and they just decided not to talk about it.
I
think this was how they thought was the best way to cope with it,
right,
was by your friends beating down your door and making you look at what you're doing. Like basically get out of, it's all about getting out of denial. Stop denying you have a problem.
Yeah.
You do have a problem. And because of Star Trek, as soon as you know what the problem is and you admit you have the problem, then you fixed it because you already know that you have the problem.
There's a special episode of Intervention.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah. So like I said, I don't want to throw too much shade on them because it feels good faith in a way. Some other Voyager episodes that haven't aged well don't.
Yeah.
But okay, so where was I? Okay, so they finish up that scene where Chakotay's like, you have a new family now, and like you're stuck with us. You have to find another way to deal with this. And she's like, I don't know how. And then saved by the bell, they're under attack. He has to go to the bridge. The Malon are attacking, and Jane was like, why are they picking a fight with us? I will fucking destroy them. And then like, oh no, they're just trying to distract us while they launch their new shuttle. And then she's like, hey, Tom, get that shuttle out now. Are you ready? He's like, yes, ma'am. Microfracture problem? It'll be fine. Chakotay's on his way. And Chakotay's striding through the hallways with his little engineer kit. And Torres comes like, no, let me go. I want to do my job. I'm still the best engineer we have. And he's like, not lately. Just like,
yeah.
Little too much tough love,
yeah,
Chakotay.
Out back.
Not lately. And she's like, I can do this. I need to do this. And he's like, all right, get out. Take this terrible plastic box and go.
Yeah.
So they're on the shuttle. They're doing pre-flight checks.
Take this Fisher-Price tackle box. And
she pops in and she's like, might need some help. And Paris is like, welcome aboard. We'll talk about our relationship later.
And then
Bork, you're in my seat.
Let's shit on Bork one more time.
Bork, get the fuck out of here.
Have y'all forgotten that he deserves it? Have you forgotten that Bork Bork is still paying off a debt, okay?
She can dump on him whenever she wants to. Okay, so like, let's see what this baby can do. And the Delta Flyer takes off. They're 3 minutes to intercept the Malon shuttle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're in. They use the Borg-inspired weaponry to, because they get fired on by the Melon freighters. Nice shooting, Seven. And they're basically like, it's a pretty neat little sequence of like, okay, we're starting to get the microfractures. We only have to hold together for like a half a minute. Well, then we have to like ascend.
We still have to get out.
We'll worry about that when it happens.
Yeah.
They get the probe and they don't do it. They ran out of the CGI budget to show the probe. Yeah. It's like just Harry Kim going, I'm getting it. Got it.
Yeah.
And then we see the panel start to buckling. It looks like creepy fingers. It's probably just the crew pushing with their hands.
No, that's CGI. It looks.
It looked practical.
It looked practical, I thought.
And this leads to an apex engineer scene of her just fucking ripping off bulkheads and like slapping together some shit and hooking a phaser to it to make a jury-rigged force field. I was like, hell yeah.
Oh, no. That part was cool.
I'm about this stuff. Like, I wish we could see more of this sort of fly by the seat of your pants fucking engineering stuff.
Some MacGyvering.
A lot of it's very cerebral in Star Trek. Like, well, I'll just click these three buttons instead of those two buttons, and this means I'm smart, and we fixed it. So showing her physically, like, ripping parts off and stapling it, and then, like, all that stuff.
She's definitely more from the Scotty school of Starfleet engineers. Let me tear this panel out and crawl up in here with a flashlight in my teeth.
Well, no, I like that that sort of hands-on engineering, like, fixes. Like,
and it makes sense since she was...
And the practical props look good. Like, the conduit.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is cool.
The one she pulled up, like, out of the panel vertically, like, that looked cool.
Yeah, it was very much like only Torres could do this.
Yeah.
This is the way only Torres would solve this problem. Yeah. Really cool scene. And then they fly out. They dock. Janeway's like, get us out of here, Ensign. Cut. Now they're all back on the ship.
Yep.
Chakotay and B'Elanna are having a little chat. He's like, I heard you did a hell of a job. And he's like, but how are you really? She's like, are you asking, am I back to my old charming self? He's like, give it time.
It's been like, what? An hour since their intervention?
It might be the next day or whatever.
It's not.
But then she says, what you did down in the holodeck, thank you. And then she's like, but if you ever do that shit again, I'll break your neck. Which is played as a joke, but is clearly not a joke.
Right.
Like,
I would have liked him to write her up right there for threatening.
For threatening your first officer?
Yeah. 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 So like, it would have been great to be like, well, it's good to see you back to yourself. Of course. Of course, I have to write you up for that.
It's a classic. What Chakotay did is a classic example of a bad idea working.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes a terrible idea works. Yeah. It doesn't mean it was a good idea just because it worked.
Yeah. Right. Then we get the last little button scene where she goes into, and I wish they'd let Neelix be in this moment with her. Like, I like that connection they made. So I wish he'd been there, but it's fine. She comes in. She replicates one stack of banana pancakes with maple syrup, which I don't think that goes. Don't at me, syrup
maple
Twitter.
Banana. Maybe.
Maybe if it's really light.
You could get kind of a Bananas Foster's kind of effect if you had a real light syrup on there. Shouldn't the bananas be in the batter too? Can you call it banana pancakes if you just have a little stack of banana slices on top?
Pancakes with bananas.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. You wouldn't put like four blueberries on top of a stack and call them. It's a garnish.
I would assume there's bananas in the pancakes as well.
Yes.
And the bananas garnish on top just help to bring out that flavor even more.
One time in Chicago, I ordered banana pancakes.
Yes.
And it was literally pancakes, and they just a whole ass banana on the side. I was like, I mean, I'm not. I love a banana, and I love pancakes.
Was the peel still on it?
No, it was all peeled. Oh, okay. It was a naked banana. Slapped right on the side.
Yeah, sorry.
That's a side of banana.
That's pancakes and a banana.
Banana.
So anyway, she's like, and
pancakes.
Banana pancakes.
I think the episode may arguably save itself.
That's one thing I wish. I wish in the future they pronounce banana.
You can make that happen in our world.
I know.
We're proceeding into the future now.
It starts today with you.
Banana.
I think that by having this last scene be silent, there's no dialogue. It's all in her, like the way she's performing it. It leaves enough wiggle room that you're allowed to kind of interpret this moment as you wish. Like clearly in 98, they intended it as she comes in, she gets the bananas, the banana pancakes. She's like, okay, am I going to feel anything when I eat this banana? She eats it. She smiles. She feels something. We're supposed to be like, B'Elanna's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But watching it now, by her not speaking, it's just one moment and clearly what will be a long process of her climbing out of this. You can view it as that, as just one moment. It's a hopeful sign. It doesn't mean she's done. It doesn't mean she's back to normal. And it's pretty clear in the scene with her and Chakotay. She's not saying I'm 100%. She's saying I'm back. I'm climbing. I'm moving in the right direction. But so I think that may save it slightly for our modern mental health aware, I mean, woke ass.
If that's what you have to do, it seems like a lot of gymnastics.
No, it's not a lot of gymnastics.
Just a little.
Well, like I said, it's the difficulty. It's sort of a good faith attempt to like.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, I'm watching it with different eyes than what they wrote it with.
Yeah.
And does this allow me to enjoy the episode with that little bit of gray area?
Yeah.
At the end, because it is an episode about mental health. It's about clinical depression.
Sure.
And like you said, the Chakotay's move is not what you should do, but it worked. It worked in this situation, and obviously, her community and her family missed the signs for a very long time. But once they did recognize what was going on, they were reasonably proactive in helping her through it.
It just took a long
time. My last note was 1998 was a wild time for therapy, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts?
I don't know. I'm on the fence, I think. I thought they did some things well. I think Roxanne Dawson was great throughout the entire episode with the material she was given. I do think it took them a long time to figure out what's going on. And maybe that's accurate now and back then. Even, sure. Even more
especially
so,
with people who are doing self-harm. They are trying to hide it from people.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they necessarily got the balance as far as how she interacts with all these other characters necessarily. It makes sense that Chakotay has a big part in it because the thing that triggered it happened to him as well. Like it's a shared moment. I do think they sidelined Tom too much. Like, I understand he's got to build this shuttle, but once they realize that there's a problem, would that really be his focus?
Tom Paris is a terrible boyfriend. You need to accept this.
Maybe.
It is canonical at this point.
Fine, I'm just...
Terrible? That seems like a strong...
I just...
Terrible.
I
He went and built a pretend Camaro for 6 months.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's awesome.
And that's cool.
Okay.
Anyway, I think it's also a 45-minute episode problem, you know, where she has connections with multiple characters. It's hard to, you know, cram all that in there, obviously. And, yeah, I think the dismount bothers me a little bit. I don't know. It happens too quickly. Like, I feel like she's been so erratic, like, just her running down the hall after this confrontation intervention thing, shock therapy, happens. She's like, okay, I'm ready to go help and do my job. I feel like as a commanding officer, I'd be like, you've been kind of crazy lately. I don't know that you're reliable. Like, and granted, I'll give you that. What she did was probably something only Torres could do.
Right.
Bork
would have not saved the shuttle.
No. But I could see maybe Chakotay says, fine, you can come too.
Right.
But I don't, I just have a hard time believing that, like, you would just be like, all right, well, go, you're fine. I don't know. And I think the pancake thing seems a little forced.
Poncock.
I think that's how you say it. I don't know. It was a little forced. I felt like the whole ending was forced is kind of where I am. So I think in that regard, I'm going to land slightly on the garbage side.
Well, I said towards the beginning that this is not an episode, this is not a timeless episode of Voyager or Star Trek in general, right? This isn't one of these things that it's just as good now and just as relevant as it was when it came out.
Right.
Because our attitudes, thankfully, in mainstream discourse have evolved in regards to mental health. That being said, it's a question of, has it aged so poorly that it's now a bad episode? And I think I'm in line with what you said a few minutes ago, Derek, that there are some moments at the end that give it just enough wobbly legs to walk around on to where it still hits at the end. The fact that it leaves you the room to sort of interpret as the viewer as to whether or not you think she's 100% okay. And I think what they're trying to tell you is she's not 100% okay, but she has sort of like nosed up and is on her way out of over the top of the disassociative storm that she's been in. I think that there's still like 4 days left on this yogurt. Like, we can still use it, you know. Like, I think it's still I think it's enough enough of the good core is there that you can still call this a good episode, even in a, you know, watching it in 2020 when thankfully we do have a better vocabulary to engage with these issues than they had in 1998. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both of you. I think this episode has some clear flaws. And the more I think about it, a huge one is that Janeway, the person that just went through a very similar experience, seems to have no ability to, like, communicate with Torres. Like, they even acknowledge that I just went through the exact same thing 2 episodes ago.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a flaw. And just, like I said, the sort of way no one, the fact that they don't catch it after weeks and months is maybe explainable, but I feel like the characters, they could have made it more clear that the characters are aware, oh shit, we missed this, like, yeah, we could have picked this up faster, oh my god, what's going on. But even with all that, I think Roxanne Dawson's performance is very good, and even though it's aged poorly, it's still a good faith attempt for the writers and the performers of the time to grapple with clinical depression, self-harm, all that stuff. And they, like I said, they gave it a lot of time. Like, the whole side story of getting the probe and building the shuttle is very sidelined, which is probably why Tom is so sidelined, because he's welded to that plot.
Yeah. Well, it's a nothing plot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like they finally built the new shuttle.
Sure.
It has been prophesied for, lo, these many seasons. But by you guys.
What?
We're corrupting the process.
Yeah. I clearly remember saying there was no new shuttle.
But yeah, so I think honestly, but really it's Roxanne Dawson is very good in this episode, and that's enough to get it over into the good category for me. I mean, there is precedent. There are no bad B'Elanna episodes. This is a B'Elanna episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I said, we talked a ton about this. Like, obviously from us looking back, we're like, no, there are clear things you're supposed to tell people in this situation. There's clear ways your family and your community are supposed to react. But they didn't have that. They didn't know to, like, say that. At least that's sort of the way I'm sort of reading this episode.
One important and perhaps the most important question that you have not yet answered: do you think the Delta Flyer looks cool?
I'm pretty neutral to it. Like, okay. I like the shot when they use it in the next episode. All of them in the cockpit with all the big windows and everything, and the nebula going by, looks very cool. On the exterior, I'm like, I have no strong feelings.
It doesn't look as cool as the captain's yacht that was supposed to be in the show. Have you ever seen the old pre-season 1 CGI mock-up of it? And you can still, when they show an underside shot of Voyager, you still see the outline of the captain's yacht. Voyager wasn't supposed to have shuttles because the idea is that the ship is too small to have like a whole shuttle bay, like the Enterprise. Right. So there was this kind of a warp-capable captain's yacht that would drop out the bottom of the saucer section. And they did like all the CGI mock-ups for it and everything, and the writers just neglected to ever use it. So you get a few seasons in, and suddenly now it's weird to be like, oh, yeah, we've got that captain's yacht.
That we've so never
you
used.
Have right. to come up with an excuse to build something that serves a similar purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, our nemeses, Garrett and Robbie D-Mac, named their podcast after the ship, after the Delta Flyer.
It's no Defiant. That's what
it's
I'll
no
say.
Defiant. Yeah.
It's no Austin.
So, we hated that, right? That's what we all agreed on? Cool.
Nope.
To the court.
Nope.
To the court.
Nope.
To the bridge.
The good citizens of the jury have reviewed the evidence. Gentlemen, your closing arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. Extreme Risk is garbage. This writer's room doesn't have the finesse and follow through for an episode like this. It was a bad idea, Your Honor. Just bad.
Captain Spurlock.
Your Honor, Roxanne Dawson's performance stands on its own merits, and so does this episode. My only complaint is that the risks were not extreme enough. At best, these were slightly higher than moderate risk. And this episode is slightly higher than moderately good.
Ultimately, the fate of this voyage is up to you good beings on the jury, but it is my august responsibility to make judgment based on the evidence and argument placed before the court today. After reviewing it all, I hereby decree that Case 503, Extreme Risk, is good. These verdicts cannot be appealed. They are final and irrevocable within this quadrant, space-time continuum, and county. Court adjourned.
The People vs. Star Trek Voyager is recorded in front of no one. Space Judge Midnightian Later is played by Derek Adams. The Prosecution, John Q. Continuum Esquire, is played by Jonathan Sparks. The Defense, Matthias Zap Spurlock, is played by Josh Darnell. All episodes of Star Trek Voyager are presumed good until proven garbage.
Shadow Public Radio presentation. For more excruciating action, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you seek podcast content.